Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You are listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
We go where no man has gone before.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning. We're thinking that was a little bit fast. Yes. I think Paul's virtual DJ is throwing a wobbler, maybe.
I can see what it's doing.
Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download podcasts for the show later and listen at your leisure. You've got Julian Paul here live as usual. Later in the show, we'll be talking to our PG. Our guest speaker this week should have been Chris Dale. He'll be talking about sugar. But unfortunately, he's had a better offer. The sun is shining upon us. That's why. All being well, next week, and indeed every first Saturday of the month, our guest speaker will be Phil Muffett from the Mexburg and Swinton Astronomical Society, and he'll be doing his Eye on the Sky talk. All good stuff. We've got some interesting stuff coming up today. First up, a little story about a biodegradable living battery.
Yes, scientists in Switzerland have developed a biodegradable living battery that is powered by fungi, built by the Swiss Federal Laboratories for Material Science and Technology in Dubendorf. The fuel cell has electrodes made from yeast fungus and white rock fungus that feed on simple sugars to create energy. Activated by water, the batteries can be used to power small devices such as sensors.
Oh, whoa, very hey. Interesting. Right, so the story I saw in the press, scientists can predict which tumours are likely to spread. So British scientists have discovered a way to predict which cancer tumours will become aggressive before they spread, paving the way for new treatments to stop the disease in its tracks. A study, which is the culmination of almost a decade of research, details how the scaffolding surrounding cancer cells helps them break out of a tumour and spread around the body. So scientists from the Institute of Cancer Research in London, ICR, and Barts Cancer Institute at Queen Mary University of London found that a structure called the extracellular matrix, or ECM, holds tumours together, acting like scaffolding around a building. So the extracellular matrix triggers changes within cancer cells, altering their shape and boosting their ability to travel elsewhere in the body. So the research published in the journal Nature Communications means that aggressive tumours, which are likely to spread, can be more easily identified at an earlier stage. So drugs are in development to target the ECM layout, that's extracellular matrix, as well as the genes that drive cell shape changes. So Victoria Sanz Moreno, who's Professor of Cancer Cell and Metastasis Biology at the Institute of Cancer Research in London, who led the study, said, "Our researchers uncovered the roadmap that cancer cells follow to break out of a tumour, enabling it to cause a secondary tumour elsewhere." So Dr. Oscar Marks from the Barts Cancer Institute said, "When clinicians biopsy the tumour, our research shows that what's on the outside of the tumour is just as important as what's at the centre, as this holds crucial information about whether a cancer is likely to spread." So for the study, funded by Cancer Research UK and Barts Charity, scientists looked at tumour tissue from 99 patients with skin and breast cancer. I thought that was a very, very interesting story. Next up, this caught my interest as well. There's been quite a lot in the press about this, but I'm just going to give you a little taster. Smartphone ban first. Barnet in London, in North London, is to become the first council to banish smartphones from all its schools. From September this year, all primary pupils will be prevented from bringing the devices into classrooms. The borough's secondary schools will follow suit, beginning with making the Year 7 intake go smartphone-free until Year 11. The policies cover 126 primary and secondaries and will ultimately affect about 60,000 pupils. Now, this final point in this particular article I thought was really interesting. All Barnet schools in North London are also recommending parents do not give a smartphone to their child until they are at least 14 years old.
I'm in the phone booth, it's the one across the hall. If you don't answer, I'll just ring it off the wall.
Told you to ignore.
Oh, what an amazing track there. Blondie Hanging on the Telephone from, I think, their debut album, Parallel Lines, 1978. We played that because we were talking about Barnet. In North London, is the first council to banish smartphones from all its schools. Yes. Most interesting. If you just tuned in, of course, listen to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms. Every week, this other article caught my eye as well. Fifth of girls born in 2030 to see 100.
Wow.
So one in five girls born in the UK in 2030 will live to be 100 years old, rising to one in four by 2047. Wow. And that's according to new projections. The predictions calculated by the Office for National Statistics, or ONS, show a lower life expectancy for boys, though more than one in eight boys born in 2030 will live to see 100, climbing to one in six by 2047. The figures have been modelled on past trends in annual death registrations, as well as input from an expert panel. For children born in 2023, the projections suggest that 17.9% of girls and 11.5% of boys will live to celebrate their centenary, increasing to 19.9% and 13.1% for baby girls and boys born in 2030. So by 2047, 24.7% of girls and 17.3% of boys will reach 100. The Office for National Statistics said it published the data to allow us to understand the size of the projected population at older ages, which is important for policy making and service planning, particularly in the health services, things like that. So Kerry Gadsden of the ONS said boys born in the UK in 2023 can expect to live on average to 86.7 years. And girls born in the UK in 2023 can expect to live on average to 90 years. And that's taking into account projected changes in mortality patterns over their lifetime. Mm. So the gap between male and female cohort life expectancy at birth has fallen over the past four decades. And they're saying that's likely to be due to improvements in lifestyle, for example, reduction in smoking rates and the working conditions of men over several decades, as well as advances in healthcare, for example, the prevention and treatment of heart disease. So the gap is projected to be down to 2.5 years by 2072. And that's that gap is the difference between how boys and girls or men and women, how long they're expected to live for, with men generally living for less years. So the ONS figures also project that girls born in the UK in 2023 can expect to live on average to an age of 90 years and boys to 86.7 years, increasing to 92.2 years and 89.3 years respectively for babies born in 2047. Now, women,
what would be the state pension age then?
Well, this is an interesting point, because people are living longer, and you know, because the birth rate is declining in the United Kingdom, and the population's aging, there's less and less people coming through to pay taxes and things like that. So it is a massive issue. So the gap between male and female life expectancy at birth has fallen from 4.4 years in 1981 to 3.4 years in 2023, and it's projected to fall further in the future. Now, all data is based on what is known as a cohort life expectancy, which takes into account projected changes in mortality patterns over the lifetime of a group of people with the same year of birth. So that's ONS research saying 20% of girls born in 2030 will probably live to see 100.
To the world.
Oh, lovely track there. Newborn by Muse, of course, from 2001. We played that because the ONS has just released research talking about life expectancy of newborns, with a fifth of girls born in 2030 expected to live to 100. Very interesting stuff for the world as we move forward. You're, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Morning. Good morning.
Hey. Good morning. On this slightly warmer and slightly sunnier Saturday. Can't be bad.
Yeah. Nice to see a bit of sun breaking through, isn't it?
It is. Well, you think about it, it's the 1st of March next Saturday, I think.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, I think the weather's looking to relapse tomorrow.
Oh,
so,
don't say that, Paul.
Yes, we
know. No. We don't want gloom. We want happiness.
The forecasts have not been great, but a bit of sunshine came into my life, and it's news from Sheffield Hallam University. So we don't often get to talk about Sheffield Hallam. I don't know why. We've not seen a lot of stories from them, but this is some research that they've undertaken at the School of Biosciences and Chemistry. It's part-funded by Cancer Research UK. And they're developing what they describe as a fingerprint in breath analysis to identify specific molecular structures that could signal the presence of cancer before any traditional symptoms appear. They're focusing on mesothelioma, and that's a cancer that usually starts in the layers of tissue that cover each lung. And most people diagnosed are already in an advanced stage of cancer, and so an invasive biopsy is needed. Just to sort of quantify it, around 230 people are diagnosed with this form of cancer in Yorkshire and Humberside each year. So Dr. Sarah Haywood-Small, the Associate Head of School in Biosciences and Chemistry at Sheffield Hallam University, said this results from this the results from this study are encouraging, an encouraging step forward in how we detect and monitor mesothelioma and other asbestos-related diseases.
Ah, interesting, asbestos, because, you know, we're just talking earlier about the life expectancy, particularly of men.
Yep.
And they were more likely to be in industries where you would be dealing with asbestos, I would guess.
Yeah, well, they give a sort of an indication of somebody who's suffering from this. A 73-year-old lady, Sue Harrison, had a diagnosis in 2023. And she's been treated, but wondering where it came from.
Mm.
And she said that she was unsure how she'd been exposed, but she used to wash her husband's overalls weekly for 25 years. And suspects that he was likely exposed to asbestos.
Mm, this is it.
So, yeah, it's, but good news to hear from Sheffield Hallam. Normally it's something from the university that I pick from the Sheffield University rather than Hallam University. And I've got a link because I used to work at the Polytechnic, as it was back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Now Sheffield Hallam. So, good news, that. And,
yeah, it's good to see it, because Sheffield University's, both of them, do some great work and great research. It's just, you don't often hear about it.
No, I think we tend to get more of a steady feed of things from the Sheffield University, and it'd be good to see if we can pick up a bit more on things that are happening at Sheffield Hallam, because it's very diverse sort of educational space, so they do deal in a lot of things, and I think there's still a lot of practical sort of level involvements from them. So interesting, but that form of sort of breath test is something that's been explored in many places to help diagnose. They say that it's a good indicator of the state of our metabolism, and there are clues to a lot of other things. So it'd be good that instead of having to go through invasive things, you just go and blow into a tube and get a diagnosis. So
It's quite amazing, isn't it? Because the interesting thing is, the key about it is they're picking stuff up way, way before any symptoms would ever show.
Absolutely, I say, and unfortunately, normally it's picked up when it's in a very advanced state. So let's just say it's a great bit of news from them.
Yeah, on that point, Paul, I did notice they've been advertising on TV, which is something I've found quite unusual. They're starting to advertise mammograms for women, suggests to me maybe people aren't uptake, you know, aren't going as much as they used to.
Well, I think if you sort of switch across the other side of the city, then there's a funding boost that they've picked up, £1 million, for research into preventing breast cancer recurrence. So they're actually sort of looking at how they can study histories of breast cancers to develop some understanding of how it can recur.
Yeah, so, it's interesting.
Again, I think there's been a reduction in the uptake of mammograms, and not having to do one myself, I did a chest x-ray, but I guess that it could be a bit more sort of unsettling to go and do it. But it's like a lot of things now. We're seeing a drop-off in immunisation and things like that. I think people are either less well-informed or becoming a bit blasé, or indeed they've been fed some disinformation on the good old internet.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting, whereas prostate cancer's gone the other way. I mean, that's now the most common cancer, isn't it? It's because people are more aware of it and it gets diagnosed earlier.
Yeah, and I say, I think a lot of it's about this early diagnosis in cancer treatment, and I think that that's two sides of the city in education that are working on health issues, and I think that, I say, it's good to see education being so well established. I mean, I think we're home to 75,000 plus students a year.
It's a lot, isn't it?
It's pretty good. I mean, I think from the old thing, it's probably better than 10% of the population.
It's a lot.
It's a very interesting thing. I think one of the other things from our point of view is some other research is looking at a new form of solar cell. So basically, again, this is University of Sheffield, and they've looked at the solar cell manufacturing process, and they're developing flexible solar cells that don't contain any of the scarce and expensive elements. So it's paving the way for low cost efficient solar energy. Basically, it's a flexible surface which is actually engraved with tiny grooves. It's embossed with tiny grooves in a plastic film, and they use what's called a perovskite material, which is part of the solar cell design. And because they're focusing on this, it eliminates the expensive and scarce materials, rare earths that we've talked about. So things like indium are sort of made to be obsolete in this process. So the other thing about it is, because it's lightweight, they can make flexible solar films, and they can put them on surfaces where you couldn't normally stand the weight of solar panels.
Interesting.
So some nice stuff going on in research in the city and across a lot of range of things. But not everything's pretty hunky-dory, because I think if you're an Apple device user, there's news that Apple have been forced to withdraw their data security tool for UK users. So they came up with this system which gave advanced data protection to the stuff that you stored on the iCloud. And it meant that only the actual user could access things. Like if you stored your photographs or you stored your latest novel up there while you're sorting out what to do with it, it was encrypted end-to-end. But the government said that they insisted Apple should fit what they call a backdoor into that system so that that information could be read. Because equally, when you find a secure form of communication these days, quite often people with less sort of worthy needs start to use it so they can hide things. So,
I see, yeah.
That's the sort of dilemma. So Apple have actually withdrawn the advanced data security tool from UK users. It's saying that they will try and plot an alternative in the future. Existing users will continue to be able to access it for a time. But essentially, they're saying that 14 types of data that can be stored on the iCloud service. And what they're going to keep will be encrypted things like your health data and some of their communication tools like iMessage and FaceTime will remain encrypted globally, including the UK. So it's part of that sort of balance of demands, because I think we talked a lot about data security and the extent to which our data has been sort of bandied around the universe in a lot of ways. So a difficult bit of news, I think, from Apple and for Apple users, because I know a few people who use Apple who are very sort of wary of interference from outside. And I think that it's one of those things, I think, with the best intentions they put in these protections, but then there's going to be a demand from somewhere else, and the sort of argument is national security as part of that issue. So it's really sort of a difficult choice, I think, and depends which side you come out on, because quite often people will say, well, I've got nothing to hide. On the other side of the fence, they say some people, once they can find that kind of secure place, start to use it for not the best of uses.
Mm.
So a difficult thing. And then,
it's a double-edged sword, data, isn't it? Information.
If you want to sort of dig down into it, I think the problem for most of us is we've got a very superficial knowledge of how our data is used. And I think that there's a big dust-up about the American elections with Cambridge Analytics providing a service to target people using mass sort of data sort of collections to profile people, to target them with the best way to promote a political party or a person. So I'm often surprised when you're asked about cookies and you sort of go through and you can either reject all and have the warning that not everything's going to work. But then when you scroll down that, you see things like sort of legitimate interests, and there are hundreds, literally hundreds,
yeah,
into thousands of companies that are data mining.
Yeah,
that's what they do, and you get it in all sorts of forms where you say, oh, well, we anonymise data and it's just trends that we can sort of do for people. But it's really a difficult sort of thing. And as we become more and more reliant on the internet, then it's quite a difficult thing, I think. I'm talking while I'm trying to scroll.
Come on.
Welcome to our world, Paul. It's interesting. Yeah, usually it's a rustling of paper.
It was.
Dropping of a pen.
God, it's a bit of fog now, isn't it, Paul?
This is a dangling of digits, I think. But I was surprised at this one, which is talking about fog harvesting, which sounds like a joke, doesn't it?
It does.
But it could provide water for arid cities. And they've been looking at this in Chile, and they have a view of an encampment in Alto Hospicio. And because their unique sort of country layout, they're all down the sort of Pacific coastline. The country is all one side of it is the Pacific coastline, and then just inland there's a large mountain range. So they actually have a lot of sea fogs, but very little rainfall. And this is something where they can put out nets and meshes, trap the fog and extract drinking water for places. And what they said is this desert city of Alto Hospicio averages less than 0.19 inches, 5 millimetres of rain a year. So they have demands. At the moment, the poorest parts of that community rely on drinking water that's delivered by truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this capturing of fog mesh, they think, could supply enough water to do away with the truck delivery system. So it's interesting. And it's in use already in places like Morocco, surprisingly, this harvesting of fog. And looking at the clouds that regularly form over the Pacific, blown across the sort of the mountain range that the city's in, it could provide them with sustainable source of drinking water. They published their findings in a paper in the journal Frontiers of Environmental Science. So they say that 17,000 square metres of mesh would be enough to provide the weekly water demand of 300,000 litres.
Wow.
They also say that 110 square metres could meet the annual demand for irrigation in the city's green spaces. And it said fog water could also be used for soil-free hydroponic agriculture, enabling yields of 33 to 44 pounds weight, 15 to 20 kilos, of green vegetables in a month.
Wow.
So... from what sounds like a joke, sounds something very sort of worthy, I guess, in what they're doing. And the sort of city of Alto Hospicio is on the edge of the Atacama Desert, which is one of the driest places on Earth. It's got little or no rainfall precipitation, so... the main source of water for cities in the area are underground aquifers, and the rock layers that contain water-filled spaces. But they were last filled up thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
So it's a finite resource, most likely. So actually finding this route for harvesting fog and thereby water is a very interesting development.
What would happen if they don't harvest it? Does it freeze on the mountain top, or?
Well, it can blow over.
Yeah, of course. So yeah.
It's actually in the clouds, so the clouds blow over, once they get over the Atacama, they probably evaporated.
Yes.
And blown even further away. So I think some of our weather has really come from the direction of the Atlantic.
Exactly,
onto our west coast. And, you know, because we've got mountain ranges like the Pennines,
yeah,
sometimes it traps it over us, and other times we manage to dodge because of that relationship. Again, in local news, if you look at these aquifers, one of the problems with a lot of the underground rock is that it becomes soluble. And we just had the case in the news of the massive sinkhole that opened up down south.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And they think the cause of that is this basically water dissolving the rock. That allows water through under the road structure. And they have this 20-metre by 10-metre sinkhole that's opened up in the middle of a populated area.
Yeah, it's caused chaos, hasn't it? But it just shows, well, obviously it takes a long time for that to erode the rock. But,
yeah,
you know, these things happen, yeah.
But this water demand, and especially the stuff from taking it from underground, has actually caused a measurable difference in the Earth's attitude in space. So it's tilted very, very slightly because of the amount of this groundwater that we've extracted for drinking.
Oh.
So,
wow.
Yeah, there's quite a lot going on with the Earth, so it'd be nice if we can have a look at that, because they say that we're changing attitudes about what the Earth's absolute core is, which is thought to have been a sort of solid ball of iron.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's changing, and again, it could actually affect where we are in space.
Oh, no.
Because the core of the Earth was supposed to be iron, because that's why we're magnetic,
yeah.
The magnetic poles. And we watched a film, Scott of the Antarctic, with
yes.
John Mills.
Yes.
Oh, what a sad story that was.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, I mean, I think the exploration, but in actual fact, exploration on both poles has absolutely taken off. Because the ice caps are shrinking,
which tends
to leave exposed access to minerals.
Yeah.
So a lot of countries now are trying to put the flag pin into part of those two ice caps to extract materials from them.
Wow.
The world's at a tilting point.
It is, because I'll be covering the environment update. The first point of that actually is, as global temperatures rise, the ice that covers much of Greenland is melting at a record rate. And as a result,
Absolutely. New
holes are appearing and expanding all the time, contributing to sea level rises around the world. So, yeah, it might unearth minerals and things like that, but actually it's causing problems elsewhere.
Yeah. I think the problem is we look at this and it's sort of thinking about the goal, the win, but you don't realise the actual loss that's going to come from it as well. So extracting things to take us forward in the sort of technology and other changes is one thing, but, you know, the cost may well be something that... we can't fix easily, and that'll be maybe then we just got to all sign up for the Starship to Mars.
Yeah. Oh, we could always get across to Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, what absolutely. A
plug. You chose a great track, because you were talking about harvesting water, drinking water from fog, and you requested, well, what else could it be? Linda's Farm with Fog on the Tyne. Here we go.
Bye-bye,
Paul.
Bye.
Sitting in a sleazy snack bar, sucking sickly sausage rolls. Slipping down, slowly slipping down sideways, think I'll sign off the door.
Cause the fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine. Could a copper catch a crooked coffin maker? Could a copper comprehend that a crooked coffin maker's just an undertaker who undertakes to be your friend? And the fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine. Tell a truth tomorrow, today will take its time to tell you what tonight will bring. Presently we'll have a pint or two together, everybody do their thing. Swing together, we can have a wee wee, we can have a wet on the wall. If someone slips a whisper that it's simple, sister, slap them down and slap it on their smalls. Cause the fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine. The fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. Fog on the Tyne is all mine. Fog on the Tyne is all mine, all mine. Fog on the Tyne is all mine. Fog on the Tyne is all mine.
Linda Swan there with Fog on the Tyne. Interesting lyrics, I have to say. RPG harmless, requested harmless. That because he was talking about, amongst other things, the harvesting of drinking water from fog. And that means that's happening in Chile, but it's also happening in Morocco, and it's working really well. If you've just tuned in, of course, listen to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. The good news is the film show are in the house, yes. And they'll be raring to go. Unfortunately, they couldn't be with us last week, but they're raring to go for this week's episode. Next up is our environment update. First up,
volunteers in Devon have planted more than 2,500 native trees so far this winter as part of efforts to recreate patches of the UK's temperate rainforest. Temperate rainforest once covered as much as 20% of the UK, but centuries of deforestation and degradation have pushed this figure down to just 1%. The Devon Wildlife Trust, which is coordinating the rewilding work, hopes to plant a total of 7,000 trees by the end of this winter.
Well, the end of this winter's coming soon, isn't it? So, meanwhile, the Woodland Trust has secured the rights to 140 hectares of grazing land and wood pasture as part of a wider project to restore natural habitats in South Wales. In 2019, the charity acquired 95 hectares of land at Brynau Farm near Swansea with the aim of restoring its ancient woodland. This latest acquisition of grazing fields and wood pasture brings the size of the conservation area to 235 hectares.
Also, an entrepreneur from Somerset has just won an award for designing a sponge that absorbs phosphates from rivers and lakes and enables them to be reused as fertiliser. Phosphates play a crucial role in modern agriculture but can fuel toxic algal blooms in waterways when they run off from fields. Jane Pierce, who helped to create the sponge, says a product can tackle water pollution and reduce the need for imported phosphates.
All good stuff. Meanwhile, a new pesticide that can specifically target individual species without damaging others is being considered for approval. Scientists hope that the use of RNA pesticides, which stop potential parasites from reproducing, could tackle pests such as the Varroa mite, which wreaks havoc on beehives and causes their colonies to collapse.
Yeah, it was also reported this week that almost 1.8 million farmed and captive birds have been culled in the past 3 months because of the spread of avian flu across the UK. The risk to humans remains low, with chicken eggs safe to eat if properly cooked, but is nonetheless a devastating blow to the livelihoods of the farmers affected.
Yes, there's been a lot in the press about the mental health of farmers who are already struggling for various reasons with their livelihoods. Finally, the lifespans of electric vehicles in the UK are now as long as petrol and diesel cars, and that's according to a study published in the Nature Energy Journal. The research found that an electric car has an average lifespan of 18.4 years compared with 18.7 years for petrol cars and 16.8 years for diesel cars. So Robert Elliott, who's a professor of economics at the University of Birmingham and one of the study's authors, said that a long-lasting electric vehicle can quickly offset its carbon footprint, contributing to the fight against climate change, making them a more sustainable long-term option. All good stuff. Very interesting.
Very nice.
That was Circa Waves. It's quite a modern band, one of our PG's picks, wasn't it, for Glory Days? Electric City. We'll talk about that because electric cars have got a longer lifespan now, making them more environmentally friendly than ever, as their carbon footprint's not as high. You're, of course, listening to Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. For the film show coming for 12 o'clock, we've just got a bit of an update on a story that Chris Dale was going to talk about today. Hidden sugars in Asia's baby food sparks concerns. It's all very interesting because a UNICEF study of 1,600 baby foods across Southeast Asia found nearly half included added sugars and sweeteners. And this is a big problem because they're saying 97% of babies do not meet their daily nutrient requirement. 40% of babies from newborn to 5 years old suffer from iron deficiency anemia. And, of course, anemia has lifelong consequences. For instance, brain development and poor immunity. And they're saying the report's saying 20% of children up to 5 years old are stunted. And so they're saying that means we fortify our products to make up for that. It's very interesting. Some are saying that sometimes children the children are underweight, sometimes they're overweight. And they're saying it's impossible to say exactly why there's been a rise in overweight children. Multiple factors in the rise of obesity, changing lifestyle and urbanisation. But nutritionists say taste preferences are developed at a young age, and in some countries, like in the Philippines, many foods catering to a sweet palate, and that's been started very early. And this report's all about added sugar in products, like a particular product called Cerelac is a really big cause for concern in the Philippines. It's the most popular flavor. The most popular flavor of Cerelac in the Philippines has about 17.5 grams of total sugars per serving, more than 4 teaspoons of sugar. But that can include both naturally occurring and added sugars. Naturally occurring sugars are good for you, or pretty much better for you than processed sugars, refined sugars. So the Nestle says in the Philippines it has several variants or flavors without added sugar, and also flavours with added sugar. It's interesting what the research is saying. People often talk about malnutrition as being somebody that's undernourished, but it's also means you can be malnourished even though you're overweight and obese, because you're eating the wrong things. You're still not getting the right amount of nutrition. So the worry is about young babies and young children being exposed to that level of sugar very early. And it's interesting because the start of the article, it mentions a young woman, Hannah, a young child, saying, you know, she's got a busy job. It takes her all over the world, and she doesn't have time, not enough time in the day to make the homemade meals her growing baby needs. But so in the Philippines, and like many other countries across the world, if they need to make something from scratch that's double the amount of work, so it's just quickly to just get a feed and mix it, pre-prepared, add hot water, and give it to the baby. Very interesting. So Cerelac, if you're wondering what that is, I'd never heard of it before. It's an instant porridge mix, and it's Nestle's, the company, biggest seller over there in Southeast Asia. So that's a really interesting one. So basically, it's not only a convenience food, but it's an aspiration as well, all for an affordable price. And that's all to do with cost of living as well. So basically it says a lot of people are basically feeding the children that because, it's cheaper, it's quicker, but it doesn't contain the nutrients. And the other problem it's got a lot of sugar in it, which is not good. So another story there from a different place, but it just shows that sugar is a big issue. It affects children from being very young. So if the palate is influenced at a very young age, it's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. So I'm afraid Chris is going to be with us, but we're going to have to leave it there because the film show is going to be in very shortly. So we're going to finish with a track from The Sugar Cubes. That's Bjork by another name, doing a track called I'm Hungry.
Goodbye.
Bye.